Welcome to week three of our Lent talks based on the book, The Grace-Filled Wilderness, where we look at concepts, experiences, conditions in all of our lives, which are double-edged conditions and experiences which can be approached both positively and negatively, and how faith helps us to inhabit and approach these experiences with hope and in trust. This evening we'll be thinking about the whole concept of identity, what gives us that. And I'd like to start by reading a poem. A name carved on a tree's trunk, a wooded tattoo. This name says, I was here. I have mattered. I am now, hopefully, in a different place. A mark is made on this wooded hill, where people met and laughed and cried, as at the foot of a cross. A leaf falls, and one life breaks somewhere, amidst all eternity. And now some words from the first letter of John, chapter 3, verses 1 to 3. Consider how great is the love which the Father has bestowed on us in calling us his children. For that is what we are. The reason why the world does not recognize us is that it has not known him. Dear friends, we are now God's children. What we shall be has not yet been disclosed, but we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And he is pure. Everyone who has grasped this hope makes themselves pure. How do we formulate our identity? Is it the town where we grew up? Our class, our sexuality, our faith, our interests, or our intellectual level. All of us are a melting pot mixture of personal history, built and honed by places, experiences, individuals, which have impacted on our lives thus far. An interesting question to ask ourselves is, if someone asked you to describe yourself in one sentence, what is the first thing you would say? How would you define the essence of who you are? And so this week we will be thinking about how our identity is understood. We are both individuals, but our identity also sites us automatically in a variety of small and larger communities. As people who follow Jesus, we are challenged to draw others into our community of faith. We arrive in this world essentially alone, and indeed, in order to understand who we are, we have to face our own aloneness, as well as to reflect on how we are amongst others. In his book, Being Human, Rowan Williams observes that as individuals, we inhabit bodies. We cannot make sense of the world without interacting with others. We work out our lives in relation to others. I cannot invent language for myself. I have to be spoken to. I cannot picture myself as a body or a self unless I am seen and engaged with. He continues that such connection involves three things: attention, attunement and atonement. In other words, in every situation where we impact on others, we have the extraordinary capacity to give others our attention, to negotiate that attention as we adjust to our encounters, and finally, we carry the capacity to be at one with each person and situation. This dynamic is simply how we live as we negotiate ourselves as individuals every time we encounter another. This is an indication that we need to find approaches to live in community that are not only meaningful and harmonious for ourselves, but that can also model something for the world as people who carry distinctive faith. We ask the questions, what are the communities where we reside, in which we reside? What kind of communities do we want to live in? And when we create these, how does faith make a difference? The poem which begins this chapter describes the human experience of carving a name on a tree, setting an individual identity within a more expansive and perhaps eternal natural order. It explores how vital it is within our humanity to understand that as Christians, we also need to be at home within the solitude of our own existence, as well as searching out those who feel lost and isolated, as well as others who live continually in a hidden but anguished loneliness. All of this, of course, is particularly poignant and relevant at this time of self-isolation. The Passion narrative reminds us that Jesus went to the cross for love and love alone. And he calls us, those who are his followers, to use the energy of this to move beyond the healthy and happy relationships and friendships given to us as gift, to create community where potentially all God's children can experience the fact that we are precious. Located as people in our own right, as well as people who live together with others, we know that all of us in some way need to leave a legacy, to make our mark, and that our names are etched on the heart of God, and they are etched on the cross of Christ. And so our own name is not a bad place to start. The words of Isaiah 43 are familiar to many of us, with their spirit of grace-filled consolation, speaking of a God who knows each person, that we are all called into his world through his love. Have no fear, for I have redeemed you. I call you by name. You are mine. When you pass through water, I shall be with you. When you pass through rivers, they will not overwhelm you. Walk through fire, and you will not be scorched. Through flames, and they will not burn you. I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your deliverer. My own name is particularly significant for me. I was born on the day after the day dedicated to St. Mary Magdalene in July. But Magdalene too was a person on the edge of the community of Christian disciples, and yet an important person within it. She was also the first evangelist, the person Jesus charged with spreading the good news that he had risen from the dead. And for me, that connects with my own vocation to do that too, to preach the good news in imaginative ways faithfully. When we know one another's names, it instantly creates a new level of bond, intimacy, invitation to relationship, perhaps. Names are significant and change in the Bible, often to signify a momentous change or awakening in an individual's role or life. Abraham, esteemed father, becomes Abraham, meaning father of a multitude, and Sarai becomes Sarah, mother of nations, a symbol of their significance as the father and mother of the state of Israel, God's chosen people. No name in history can send shivers down our spines, symbolise dehumanisation, numbering of people in periods of slavery or the Holocaust. Pilate and Judas in the Passion narrative have become historical bête noires, entrenched symbols of weakness and betrayal, however unfairly. Standing before Pilate, Jesus himself ceases to be named and is instead anonymised. His identity and actions are labelled as blasphemous in order for his arrest to be easier. But as he hangs on the cross, his personhood now runs alongside his title. It is Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. So, our names are important. They are the first port of call in terms of our own identity. I'll just move on briefly to look at the concept and experience of solitude. The solitary life is one which removes a person decisively, sometimes defiantly, to plumb the depths of the divine. The first Christian hermits were those who positioned themselves in the Egyptian and Syrian deserts in the 4th and 5th centuries in order to face the fallenness of their own naked humanity, the depravity of the world, and through these to move through their own loneliness to reconnect with a living God who is present to each person. Their recorded experience of discipline and facing demons is a far cry from narcissistic and unadulterated introspection, and far more a release of heart, mind, and soul for God alone. Their experience told them that in order to understand how to truly love others and to understand their own place in the world, they were called to face themselves with rigorous honesty, a journey learning gradually to be at peace on their own. The Celtic saints similarly carry the reputation for living their Christian mission primarily alone. St. Ninian, in the southwest of Scotland, spent most of his life in a cave, overlooking the sea. Jesus needed time and space to be alone as well. The gospel accounts record that he regularly withdrew to be alone, to fill himself more with God's power after the demands of healing and prophecy. Matthew 5 has this happening after Jesus has called the first disciples and after he has healed a man with leprosy. The text records significantly that this was a lonely place, a place where Jesus would encounter no one else. Deep peace comes when and if we can be brave enough to explore the essential and integral loneliness of life, when we accept that our lives can be precarious, unpredictable, but also that being alone can be restorative and an aid to deepening an understanding of what we are about. So solitude is, if you like, a positive way of being alone and part, very much strong part, of the Christian tradition. Move on to loneliness. And perhaps the archetypical passage in the Passion narrative is when we remember Jesus and his time alone before he was arrested in Gethsemane. If you want a Bible passage to look up, it's Mark 14, verses 32 to 42. Loneliness is hallmarked by an intense desire to bring the experience to a close, something which cannot be achieved by sheer willpower or by simply getting out more, but only developing intimate connections. This is far easier said than done, especially for people whose loneliness arises from a state of loss or exile or prejudice, who have reason to fear or mistrust as well as long for the society of others. The lonelier a person gets, the less adept they become at navigating social currents. Loneliness grows around them like mould or fur, a prophylactic that inhibits contact, no matter how badly contact is desired. And those two are quotes from Olivia Lange from The Lonely City, but quoted in a novel that became very well known and very widely read last year called Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, an exploration in story form by the novelist Gail Honeyman, incredibly powerful novel. But Jesus in Gethsemane is a very Lenten story, particularly in Holy Week. He is surrounded by his closest friends who do not and cannot share his own loneliness and spiritual torment. This is the point in his life where the realisation that he had embarked on a pathway which would have inevitable consequences was understood by him and others. One which would end his earthly life, a spectacular failure of the popularity he had enjoyed in the brief years of teaching and preaching. I don't know about you, but I imagine Jesus crouching by a rock in Gethsemane, perhaps observing casual visitors passing through a garden on a balmy night, who stroll nonchalantly after a good meal, oblivious of the fate that awaits him. Mark's Gospel in particular uses vivid language. Jesus throws himself on the ground, praying fervently that this cup of suffering, a violent death which he must have known to be a possibility, could be taken from him. And so Gethsemane reminds us that Jesus himself went through a deep loneliness. Loneliness comes in many forms. It can be chosen as well as imposed. Loneliness so often happens when we are, ironically, surrounded by others. It often leads to isolation, which means being in a state of separation between individuals or groups, as well as a feeling of being disliked and alone. As our society changes the nature of how it presents and creates community, a variety of people, often vulnerable, fall through the net to become prisoners of loneliness, in a world obsessed with having friends, constant communication, and with at least the appearance of being popular. Perhaps particularly at this time of crisis in our world, our challenge is to make sure that as Christians we try to combat that loneliness. And Jesus's challenge to those who wish to listen is always anti-isolationist. In Gethsemane, he pleads with his disciples to stay awake, to remain aware of his own plight and to be alongside him in his hard waiting. In the Gospels, he reaches out to individuals and groups who believe themselves to be superior, to those who believe themselves to be holier, to those who are disliked and vilified because of their social status, sex, profession or past, to effectively say, "Stop the isolation. Step out from your darkness. Take my hand." Scholar Marcus Borg comments, "Community is utterly central to Christianity, as it is to all enduring religions. Community of praise, community of nourishment. The most nourishing thing I can do for my Christian journey is to be part of a worshipping community that sings its heart out." Community is also about the process of formation. A place where re-socialisation into a new identity and way of being can happen to anyone willing to participate. This, he states, is about a decisive stance against the values of the Western way of life, which, with its obsession with the three A's of appearance, affluence and achievement, has become so radically different from anything which is recognisably Christian. Transforming loneliness into community through grace is really powerful. So we've talked about three things so far which create our identity, if you like. Our names, and then how we begin to inhabit the social and private spaces in our lives. Thinking about solitude and loneliness and a little about community. We can also talk and think about friendship. A really good passage on friendship is in the Gospels, John 15, where Jesus begins to prepare his own disciples for his last days. Here he talks about connection, a new community which can be formed like the metaphorical vine, a healthy plant with branches growing and supporting one another. And then he talks about love, but a love like no other. Love, not a rom-com optional extra, but a commandment, an active verb for which there is no alternative but to put into practice. He spells this out to his sometimes stupid disciples. They are no longer to understand themselves as servants, but as friends. Friends because friends are people trusted with important, often confidential information. At this time, precious pearls of wisdom, which are to form the basis of the new vision God has for the world. They are friends because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. And moreover, their selection as friends was a decisive choosing by Jesus, even though most of the time they often don't fully understand why this was. But the truth remains, they have become not just the guardians, but are now the conduit through which the kingdom will be promoted and established with the work of God's phenomenal Spirit. And so we finally move, as we have every week, from a place or places of wilderness to a place of grace. We're beginning to do that thinking about friendship. And we're going to finish our reflection this week thinking more about community. We've already begun to do that thinking about loneliness. Today we live for the most part surrounded by people. We live as part of both healthy as well as dysfunctional communities. But it's a very natural human yearning many of us feel. We want to be part of some kind of community, whether that's in our work or with a club or through our church or all of those things. But we yearn to create links with others who share a common interest, worldview or lifestyle. Community can be our own family, a geographical place where we physically reside, our faith or interest group, or a way of belonging which is more dispersed. We flow in and out of various communities as we move through our lives, often with the imprint of those we have encountered and the experience of belonging, acceptance or rejection remaining. At the moment, of course, the virtual communities which we will set up and create are also particularly relevant and important. In Philippians 2, Paul describes to the people of Philippi his own understanding of this. At the heart of any new Christian community must be the person of Christ. The Holy Spirit inspires friendship and encourages unselfish and expansive attitudes towards each other, in compassion, with kindness, humility and patience. A strong and good community looks out for the other's interest, not just our own. Grounded always in the nature of Christ, we see this as a movement from egoism to service, from a dying of self to the reforming of self, in the light of an understanding and loving of others. Community is therefore not a cosy or comfortable banning of insecurity. It does not provide an escape from the pressures or anxieties of the current world, but rather it provides a purifying fire where we learn to trust in the delightful individuality of one another whilst working amidst the craggy idiosyncrasies, deepest annoyances and the most magnanimous kindnesses we are each capable of, clothed in the power of God. Jesus's own metaphors for living together are community-centric. The vine and its branches that can bear fruit but also need pruning. The field with both wheat and tares, where both grow up alongside the other. The sheep and the goats. The disciples themselves in all their imperfect and broken variety. Community is simultaneously beautiful, a potential antidote to loneliness, Yet it's also a place where we come face to face with ourselves through interaction with others. I'm sure I'm not alone in really enjoying the series, the long-standing series called The Midwife, which has become one of the nation's favourite TV programmes for Sunday evening viewing. 2019 saw its eighth series as the story continued around the hub that is Nonata's house, a genuine historical place, St. Frideswyde Mission House, where a community of nuns from the community of St. John the Divine and midwives eat, live and pray together as they go about their daily work of serving the area of Poplar in East London, itself a rainbow community of poor, diverse, settled as well as immigrant people. Both nuns and midwives bring their issues, which are 21st century ones as well. Alcoholism, the prejudice faced as a gay person or ethnic minority, mental fragility and the demands of a vocational job which asks for there to be a response at every hour of the day. Over the years the series has been running, most life issues have been washed, rinsed and spun in the laundry of this community house. But here is no straightforward or twee harking back to a 1960s golden age where sumptuous high teas were calmly eaten and manners were exemplary. Here are imperturbable and mettlesome women, brave enough to face not only the complexities of giving birth in often difficult circumstances, but also the gritty reality of some of the healthcare challenges of the period. Illegal abortion, thalidomide children, injuries at work, well before health and safety regulations came into being. What might be described as holy commentary floats over each episode at the beginning and end of the programme, the offerings of a gentle wisdom, often with a deeply Christian strand, which centres on the redemptive power of living alongside one another in a grace-filled and genuine community. Here, community is modelled as holding a genuinely redemptive power, where the small irritations of life, as well as life's big issues, are gently held, as well as worked through, as the members of this community become beacons of light and hope for the wider urban community in which they serve. This week's journey, identity, name, solitude, loneliness, friendship and community. And I'm just going to find some further questions to read from the book if you would like to think about these questions more. Just prayer and action. Reflect on where you find your own identity. What factors make you who you are before God at this present time? Does your own name have any significance for you? What does it say about you, and what might God be calling you into through the gift of it? Who are the people you know who live in a state of solitude daily? Can you identify those who feel content and at peace with these and those who are lonely? What can you learn from both sets of people and how do you respond to them? Can your church provide a forum where this can be talked about openly? How could you or your church help those who are significantly challenged by loneliness? Do you yourself feel lonely? Who have been your most important friends over the years? What is it about them that makes friendship work? Reflect on which friends you have had for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. How can you provide friendship to someone new in your place of work, church, or community? Pray for those people with few friends or who are at odds with their friends. Where are the communities you inhabit? What are the life-giving components of these? What are the things that drain these of life? Can you discuss which dynamics create a healthy community in a study or a home group? And finally, do the boundaries of the communities you inhabit need stretching to become more hospitable or inclusive?